Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear. Cause the truth will be too much.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Our Need to Know brought to you by Jungle Law. Experiencing a rumble in the legal jungle? Call the lawman at Jungle Law. If you have a criminal charge pending, call him right away. Jungle Law also handles employment-related issues, even against corporations. Call Jungle Law for a free consultation, 833-4JUNGLE. That's 833-4JUNGLE. Find him online at junglelaw.com. We start with some Chiefs football. Let's begin with Andy Reid. I asked him about the offensive line and the right tackle position, in particular how Kennard is fitting into the mix. What was his thoughts here with the right tackle spot?
Yeah, so I tell you, Andrew's probably, you know, he's doing a nice job. So we're excited about him and the way he's playing. And then the other guys are trying to chase him. So it's good competition, and we'll see how it all works out. But Andrew did a nice job for us last year when he had a chance, and he's done well for us now. So.
Coach, I know the versatility for your offensive line is important, especially the backup. Nick Allegretti, how's he look at the center? Does he look comfortable? And
yeah.
How hard is that snap you know, with so many shotguns?
We're comfortable with him in there. And he can do the guard stuff. He's also that extra tight end position that we use him in and on goal line short yardage. But he's a real smart kid and can handle all that aptitude-wise. So he's got quite a bit on the plate.
It's pretty good for Nick Allegretti.
I came away from that going, well, Allegretti's on this team.
Yes,
he's not fighting for anything.
Any question there.
You know, that's the one thing there. He talked about all the different things that he does, and he looked good today. I thought he was very efficient. I was talking with some of the folks that have been up, like Sam McDowell, who was with us earlier. If you missed him, you can catch him on the podcast at 810WHB.com. But, you know, they said, well, he's missed, on the snaps when he's, half in a snap. It's like still a work in progress. And he's been beaten a couple of times when he's been at center. But looked pretty good to me. He was snapping the ball today. Thought the snap was clean. I guess that's what it was. I'm sorry. He wasn't getting beat. He was missing on some of the snaps itself. But didn't get beat. Handled the snaps well today. And so, I like Allegretti. The problem is, he's like such a great guy to have because he's versatile, he's good, first of all, and he's versatile and he's cheap against the cap. And that's about to change after this year. He's gonna, I think probably not be a Chief unless something happens and he moves into the starting lineup. I think he's gonna get a chance to go compete for a starting job. And I think he's gonna get paid a lot more than he was being paid as seventh rounder, right? I'm not mistaken. He was a sixth or seventh. Okay. I think there's gonna be a team out there that doesn't have two all pro caliber guards that's gonna say, or doesn't have an all pro caliber center. I mean, this guy's a good player that's blocked by three guys. Two of them, one that's been a Pro Bowler, and I think maybe even an All-Pro in Joe Tooney. Creed Humphrey should have been, and I think will be All-Pro. That's better than Pro Bowl, by the way, this year. And I think Trey Smith's going to be a Pro Bowl guard in the future. So tough spot for him to break through here in Kansas City. And so in all likelihood, I think he'll get a big raise and a spot someplace else. In the meantime, he gives them great depth in the interior.
You win again, round 7, 2019.
That's what I thought, yeah. Okay. Travis Kelce at the podium today. He goes back to the first year with Andy Reid. I asked Kelce how far this offense has evolved from his first season back in 13.
I don't want to say it's night and day, man, but when I first got here, we had, I think, Dwayne Bowen and Jamal Charles. I mean, those were our two weapons that we knew we could go to. And with those two, it was just like a lot of the stuff that we were doing was run game stuff, and it was play action. And outside of that, it was Alex Smith was really good at running two-minute tempo or a turbo tempo where we would get up to the line, and that whole package has changed. So it's night and day different from when I first got here. I definitely was more hand in the ground tight end back then, but now it's evolved to, we can get that ball, anywhere on the field at any moment. And, it's exciting.
Has there been a significant amount of changes, you feel like, without asking you to give anything away, from last year to this year because of the new guys?
I wouldn't say that. I would say there's a lot more personnel to put guys in certain situations. In terms of the turnover of offense, I mean, you're always going to have new stuff. I mean, that's just Coach Reed's kind of – that's what he specializes at, right, is making you think about what we've shown on film and what we could possibly run out of it. So I think we just keep evolving like that, and we'll be just fine.
Didn't want to say night and day, and then he said night and day.
Yeah, night and day. And I thought what you take away from there was he talked about how the offense has evolved based upon the talent that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
That Andy Reid, like a good coach, morphs what he's doing to fit the talents of the players he's got. You know, they ran it one way with Alex Smith. They run it a different way now with Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, I think that kind of speaks back to the coaching of Andy Reid. Very impressive. But Travis Kelce looked good on Saturday and primed for a big year. You know, on the broadcast, they said he'd only had five consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. That's six. I was like, that's
really?
One. Yeah. And go back and watch.
They're usually notable
I tweeted it out. I'm like, it's actually six.
For really, they really love him up. I'm surprised they won't fall short.
Somebody didn't. I'm quite confident, like Brad G's aware of it, but yeah. Putting those notes out after every year. But so somebody didn't check with somebody. But yeah, six in a row of 1,000, and nobody had done more than three. Greg Olsen with three was the most before Travis Kelce had gone to six. Little piece of NFL news: the Bears and Roquan Smith. NFL management today, the management council, sent out a memo to all 32 teams stating that a non-NFLPA certified agent has been contacting clubs on behalf of Smith. The memo said that the council was informed by the NFLPA that a person by the name of St. Omni, who is not an NFLPA certified agent, is contacting clubs indicating that he is representing Roquan Smith, who is under contract to the Chicago Bears. The memo states that Mr. Omni is prohibited from negotiating player contracts or discussing potential trades on behalf of any NFL player or prospective players and assisting in or advising with respect to negotiations. He doesn't have an agent, so some guy's like, I'll be the guy. And then it's that old... Well, I'll put together a deal, and then at the end, I'll take my cut, right? We'll get it for this much. I'll get it for that much. No, not really an agent.
What the hell is going on?
Not really an agent. Royals and Twins back at it tonight, 6:40. Chris Bubich versus Joe Ryan. Twins 188 favorites in this one. Vinny Pascantino will be, I assume, is in the lineup for the Royals tonight.
Yes.
Maybe not, named AL Player of the Week. 456 he hit this week, 10 of 22, four homers, six RBIs in six games. That's good for basically an 1,100 OPS. In the month of August, the Royals have seven rookies in their batting order for tonight. It's the first time since the 1991 season finale. Six of the rookies made their debut this season. So the youth movement continues for your Kansas City Royals. Let's take a break. We're going to talk quarterbacks, black quarterbacks in particular. Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Jason Reed has written a book with that title. We'll talk about it, find out what it does mean for America. That's coming up next here in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. NFL season off and running. Training camp. We're talking training camp each and every day. We're talking about what's being said up there. As we were just playing some of the sound bites, we all sit and wait for Patrick Mahomes to come to the podium. We know him in this town as the electric quarterback that brought championships back to Kansas City after a 50-year wait. But really, he's even more. I think sometimes this is an example of not seeing the trees through the forest. Do I have that right? I always wonder, is it not seeing the forest through
not
the trees?
Not seeing the forest for the trees. If you're so close to the trees, you can't see the forest.
Okay.
The actual quote is not seeing the forest for the trees.
Patrick Mahomes carries a huge stature around the NFL and around this country. And part of that is because he is not only a great quarterback, but he is a black quarterback. There is a great book that is out. It's called Rise of the Black Quarterback. And the author, Jason Reed, is with us here in the program. Jason, how are you, sir?
Hey, how we doing?
Doing well, doing well. I always like the full title of the book, Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Is, you know, my first thing whenever somebody writes a book is, number one, I'm always jealous because I could never sit and go through everything it takes to write a book. But what was the inspiration? Why did you decide this isn't, I know where you're writing now with your, say, day job is probably part of the equation as well. But what was the reason why you thought this is the book I want to write and now's the time to do it?
Yeah, you know, you talked about my day job. So I'm a senior NFL writer for ESPN. And back in the 2019 season, the NFL was commemorating its 100th season, the 2019-20 season, and it just seemed to me that there were more superstar black quarterbacks or guys who potentially could be superstars than ever before. So I went to my editors at ESPN and I said, hey, I want to look at these guys and what they potentially could do in the NFL's 100th season, because you're talking about historically the most marginalized group in the league, and hey, they had a chance to do something in the 100th season that was unprecedented, and we know what happened. Lamar Jackson, in his first full season as a starter, he wins the AP MVP award. He does it unanimously. He's only the second quarterback other than Brady to do it. A guy you just mentioned that people, your listeners know about very well, Patrick Mahomes. He leads the Chiefs to the first championship, Super Bowl championship, in 50 years and wins the Super Bowl MVP award. And in doing so, at then only 24, became the youngest player in NFL history to have a league MVP award, a Super Bowl MVP award, and a Super Bowl trophy. Kyler Murray, who was the number one overall pick coming into that draft that year, he winds up being the AP Offensive Rookie of the Year. Russell Wilson had a great season. Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, who was then with the Houston Texans. And so it truly was, from both a statistical standpoint and accomplishment standpoint in terms of winning, the greatest year black quarterbacks had ever had in the league. And so after that, I'm going to the Super Bowl in my Uber, and some people start reaching out to me about writing a book, but I didn't want to write a book on the same thing I had just done, the year of the black quarterback. I wanted to kind of look at the history of this and just kind of trace, how did black quarterbacks go from being the most marginalized group to one of the most powerful in the NFL in about 70 to 77 interviews, and about 88,000 words later, we have Rise of the Black Quarterback, what it means for America.
And what was the, you know, was there a seminal moment anywhere along the way that you say, all right, this was big, or two or three moments that were the ones, or was it just a slow, you know, chipping away, you know, Andy Dufresne style, with a geology hammer, right, in his midst to try to dig his way all the way out of the prison. How would you describe what the key moments were?
Yeah, well, I don't look at it as a Shawshank redemption moment. I think of more of it like there were, as you said, there were two or three key things that happened. Doug Williams gets drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the first round in 1978. First black quarterback ever drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. The NFL has been around since 1920. In the 1987 season, he winds up leading Washington to the Super Bowl over the Denver Broncos. He wins the game's MVP award, 340 yards passing, four touchdowns. First black quarterback to ever start in the Super Bowl and win the game's MVP award. That's a seminal moment, because up until that point, black quarterbacks, quite frankly, were considered too stupid, too lazy, and not people who could lead. So that changed perception a little bit, to where owners started thinking, well, okay, this may be a one-off, but what if it's not? Then Warren Moon, now we're in the late 80s, early 90s, Warren Moon, who did not get drafted out of college despite leading the University of Washington to a Rose Bowl victory and was the conference's co-player of the year, he has to go to Canada. He goes to Canada, record-setting career, championships, yards, touchdowns. Gets signed as a free agent by the Houston Oilers, and after a rough transition period, he starts lighting it up. He becomes a perennial Pro Bowler, winds up being the only black passer enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, we're in the late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s. Now we have Randall Cunningham, the ultimate weapon, this dual-threat quarterback, a guy that the NFL had never seen the likes of. So those three guys, Doug Williams, Warren Moon, and Randall Cunningham, they really start to change the perception.
How much further do we still have to go? Like, when you hear this year, the comments that were made about, you know, there was one, it was in Mike Sando's piece. He always does his quarterback tiers. He's the first, I know a lot of people do it now, but he was the first guy to do it. And, you know, he's quoting some of the general managers, and one of the GMs said, you know, basically he's not going to throw to win. You know, it's never going to happen. I don't care how many MVPs he wins. You're not winning a Super Bowl with him. Patrick Mahomes, there's a defensive coordinator that's quoted, or defensive play caller, I think, to be accurate in quoting, that said, you know, well, yeah, if the scheme's not there, then he'll beat you playing street ball. Are we close to being to where this is not an issue, a subject that it's across the board, not just level playing field, but also level acceptance, level regard for the accomplishments of the quarterbacks? How close do you think we are to that?
Listen, I tried to make this clear in every interview I do around the book. There has never been a better time to be a black man who plays quarterback in the NFL. These guys have the biggest contracts. Teams are built around them. They are revered by fans. They are people who have enormous power within the NFL in terms of shaping what the league does. Now, having said that, progress is not perfection. And Patrick Mahomes addressed those comments about him in the piece you mentioned from the anonymous defensive play caller talking about he has to come after he comes off his first read that, you know, that's when he has to play street ball and they lose. The quote on his face was just ludicrous for several reasons. First of all, in the history of the Super Bowl era, Ken Stabler, the Hall of Fame quarterback from the Oakland Raiders, has the best record through 50 starts of any quarterback at 40 wins, 9 losses, and 1 tie. You want to know who's second in the Super Bowl era through 50 starts? A guy named Patrick Mahomes. He's 40-10. Patrick Mahomes has played in 4 AFC championship games in his 4 years as a starter. He's made 2 Super Bowls and won one. The Chiefs don't lose with Patrick Mahomes, at least not losing in the sense that person was talking about in that piece. The reality of it is Patrick Mahomes is not a one-read quarterback, and he plays street ball? Hey, if he was Brett Favre, you'd say he was a gunslinger. So, look, we've made a lot of progress, and I would never try to argue otherwise. But as Patrick Mahomes said, even today, some of the criticism about guys who look like him doesn't look the same as some criticism about guys who don't look like him.
We're talking to Jason Reed. He is the author of the book Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Let's talk about that part, what it means for America. What has it meant? What has the acceptance, at least to the degree we have, and like you said, it's never been a better time now. What has that led to? Because, like, you're in this town, we remember, the Chiefs were considered, cutting edge because Willie Lanier was allowed to play middle linebacker, right? The signal caller of the defense. That had never happened. That was a big deal back in the Hank Stram era, that the defensive signals being called by a black middle linebacker, was a big deal. And the Chiefs were also heralded for having Buck Buchanan. They took number one overall out of Grambling, and I think it was Curtis Morgan's. Where did Willie
Morgan
go?
State?
Morgan State. The Chiefs, willingness to go and seek talent in our historically black universities. Where is that parlayed now into society? Like, do you find discernible progress there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, the Chiefs were at the cutting edge of this. And, middle linebacker, center, quarterback, the up-the-middle positions, the thinking man's positions, the center has to make the line adjustments. He's a quarterback on the line. The middle linebacker has to make the defensive calls. He's the quarterback of the defense. But let's take it off the field for a second. If you are someone in corporate America who is leading a big project for your company, a very important project that has to succeed, you are the quarterback of that project. If you go in for a medical procedure, it's a hairy situation, and there are many doctors involved, and that lead doctor has to get you through this thing, he is your quarterback. When we think of quarterback, we think of the best among us. We think of the brightest among us. We think of the person who inspires everyone else to want to succeed. So if black men historically, for most of the last century, from playing quarterback, that says something about American society writ large, because the NFL is the 800-pound gorilla that dominates American popular culture. So what the rise of the black quarterback really means for America is that once the playing field becomes somewhat level, not completely level, but somewhat level, any among us, no matter what we look like, no matter what our race is, can all rise up and contribute to the fabric of the greatest country in this world.
So if we're making progress around the game, in the game, at the quarterback position, why aren't we making progress at the head coaching position?
Well, that's the last frontier. The NFL for 13 years, from 1934 through the 1945 season, banned African Americans, banned black players from the league. So the first frontier was reintegration. So that frontier finally fell. Then the next frontier for many, many years was center and middle linebacker. Quarterback was just completely off limits. Well, center fell. Middle linebacker fell. As you said, the Chiefs had a run. And then the because if black players were allowed to play quarterback, well, now the league was inclusive. No, the ball was moved to the next frontier. The last remaining great frontier is coaching. And you know what they used to say about black quarterbacks? Well, there are no black quarterbacks because we can't find quarterbacks who are good enough who are black to play the position. And that was ludicrous on its face, and we now see that. And now we're in a situation where, well, you know, it's hard to find good black coaches. No, it's not. You just have to want to do it, just like with black quarterbacks. So that's the next frontier. That's the next barrier to fall, and that's what's what's up. What is up next?
And my here's you know, and I have not finished the book in full disclosure, so maybe I'll get to this point later on. So I apologize if I'm asking something that I ought to know the answer to already. My theory on this is yes, if you're truly exceptional, you can play quarterback as a black quarterback, right? Like if you're the best of the best, they're happy to draft you now. That wall has been torn down. They're happy to pay you now. That wall has been torn down. Their lust for success, their own championships, the greed, their own revenue returns. There's no doubt the Chiefs' value has gone up remarkably since Patrick Mahomes was drafted and developed as into the quarterback that he is now, is there. But really, head coaching is largely held by guys who weren't very good, right? Like, are we still missing the guy? Like I went through and tried to quantify it, and I actually was pleasantly surprised. My theory going into it was that there was almost no backup quarterbacks that were black, right? That there were going to be two or three. And I was actually surprised as I got into the second and thirds. There were more than I thought, but still I did not think a representative number, obviously compared to the percentage of players that play that are African-American. Is part of what needs to happen is the fact that we still are at a point that, yes, you can play quarterback if you're black, but if we're looking for, you know, the backup quarterback to hold the clipboard and, you know, mentor guys and do that kind of stuff, it's still held by white quarterbacks?
Listen, as you said, gone are the days when teams in NFL draft rooms, the so-called war rooms on draft day, will now say, well, no, we're not going to take this quarterback because he's black. Gone are those days. And there are some black backup quarterbacks in the league. Charlie Batch was a guy who had that role mm-hmm. for a long time. You know, people remember him with Detroit Lions, and there are other guys. But yes, you know, these head coaches and these quarterback coaches. You know, we know that team owners like to pick from the offensive side of the ball, in large part because if you get a guy you think is a franchise quarterback, you're making a massive investment in him. You want a coach who can maximize what you get out of him. So we know that these backup quarterbacks, you know, they become quarterback coaches and they become eventually offensive play callers and then, you know, eventually head coaches. So that is an area where, you want to talk about more people in the pipeline. There are enough coaches in the pipeline right now where there could be more qualified, confident, highly skilled black coaches. But the pipeline will be overflowing once those guys get to be in the league if they want to go into coaching because, you know, not everybody wants to be a coach. I look at the amount of money like guys like Patrick Mahomes are making, guys like Russell Wilson. I mean, these guys, you know, they may not want to start out, you know, fetching coffee and, you know, putting together videos and picking up people at the airport, okay?
Right.
They may not want to do that, but they may want to own teams. They may want to be general managers, like a John Elway. And will those opportunities be there for them?
Well, and that's my point, right? I mean, there's no doubt that we're making progress in a different way with LeBron James and even Patrick Mahomes being in the ownership group now for the Kansas City Royals and Sporting Kansas City. And we're seeing more and more of that athletes, now the money has gotten so big that we're seeing more people of color at least get into that. And that's its own club that you got to get into. You got to be in as that, you know, it sounds funny saying this, minority owner, right? That smaller percentage owner to get into the club to then eventually be the Michael Jordan type, which is well, I think is he now still the only African-American owner of one of the big four sports in the U.S. I think he is. I apologize if I'm not. I know Shad Khan is minority, but anyway, my point being, so back to the quarterback part of the equation is, you're right, Patrick Mahomes is never going to do that. He's never going to spend the time in the film like a Sean Payton did, who was a, you know, barely in the league quarterback, you know, scab quarterback, you know, from northeastern Illinois. But if you, you know, there are guys that could theoretically fill that role who that would be their playing career is just barely in the league. They're much more likely to say, okay, I'll be a coach. But if the only guys that get to play quarterbacks are the superstars, like Brett Favre ain't going to be a coach, right? Like Peyton Manning doesn't want to be a coach. I get that, but it's the guys that hang around for 3, 4, 5 years, and that's the opportunity that's not being presented. We ran the numbers on this, and almost exclusively offensive coordinators jobs are held by people who either played quarterback or coached the quarterback position, and most of them, many of them, both. And so if you don't get to that point, you can't even get in the door. And by the way, everybody is, and I think wisely, hiring offensive minds as head coaches. And they're much more likely to give a defensive coordinator job to a person of color than they are an offensive coordinator job. That still shows that there's a wall to get over.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the NFL is trying to address this with its, you know, offensive internship program for coaches because mm-hmm. they say that, okay, if we know that there are only two black offense coordinators in the NFL, you guys know of one of them, Eric Bieniemy mm-hmm. of the Chiefs, and the other one is with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh my, I'm drawing a blank on my guy's name right now.
Byron Leftwich.
I write about him all. Yeah, but I write about him all the time. I'm drawing a blank on his name now. But Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy are the only two black offense coordinators in the NFL. So if we know that coaches are being picked by team owners from the offensive side of the ball, and with good reason, as we said, because if you're investing this type of money in a guy you think is a franchise quarterback, you want to get the most out of him. Well, the NFL's thing is like, okay, well, we've got to get more coaches in the pipeline on that side of the ball. And the league now has a program, its offensive assistant program, or its offensive fellowship, whatever the name is in terms of, you know, that you want to zero in on that. But they're coaches who are coming from colleges, who are now, you know, working with the head coach and the offensive coordinator and the offensive side of the ball. And the hope is that, you know, in 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years down the line, there'll be more quarterbacks coaches and offensive coordinators of color, so there'll be a bigger pool to pick from. Again, I would make the argument that there are more than enough qualified coaches out there who could be head coaches, but we know the trend. We know where team owners are picking from, and so this is the NFL trying to be proactive.
We're talking to Jason Reed, author of Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Last subject I want to hit with you, and that's Colin Kaepernick. I know there's a chapter towards the back. I haven't gotten to it about Colin Kaepernick. I had someone, and I just run this by, said, well, Colin Kaepernick, you know, it shows that we've at least gotten to the point that race isn't the biggest thing because it's actually politics that's keeping him out, right? Like, he was in, but like, we have something that's an even bigger issue, and that's politics, and that is actually a sign of progress. Just your reaction to a statement like that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes.
You know, the person is saying it has nothing to do with race. Well, it was actually politics about race,
right?
Because what he shined a light on was systemic oppression and police brutality within communities of color predominantly. So I don't know if we can actually separate the two. We can separate in the sense that, yes, no longer, you know, are we in a situation or at a time when black quarterbacks will not be selected in the draft, or that, you know, a superstar black quarterback coming from college he would just have to change positions. So yes, you know, that part of it is true, but Kaepernick was dealing with, his protest was largely about race and about class and how people of color are treated within the system. And regardless of where you come down on his former protest, like, the things that he was trying to shine a light on had a lot to do with race. As far as Kaepernick not being in the league, look, let's just say this. With me, you can have a discussion about how many teams on which Colin Kaepernick could have started. That's a legitimate discussion that I'm willing to have with people. But if you want to come to me and say that Colin Kaepernick, over the last, you know, not now, I mean, now we're talking almost 5 years out, but, you know, in 2017, 2018, wasn't one of the best 64 quarterbacks in the NFL, that's not a conversation you can have. Not when we're talking about a guy who has one of the best career touchdowns to interception ratios, not when you're talking about a guy who made 58 career starts, not when you're talking about a guy who helped a team reach a Super Bowl and then reach the NFC Championship game, and a quarterback where the dearth of quarterback play in this league is so, like, obvious that if you're telling me this guy isn't good enough to be on a roster, well, we have nothing to talk about. And the only reason Kaepernick is not on a roster is because he angered team owners because they were worried about their ability to expand their profits exponentially year after year. As we've come to find out, the NFL is the safest business in America. Okay, it's recession proof. It's controversy proof. We know this because even after some fans left the game, TV ratings soared last year during the playoffs, which were incredible. The networks gave even more money. So the team owners are going to be fine. And I will say this too, and I know I'm getting a bit long winded. So if we got to go, just let me know and I'll shut up.
No, you're good. You're good.
But you know what we saw about Colin Kaepernick is we saw that Colin Kaepernick was just good enough for the NFL to turn its back on him. And by that, what I mean is, several years later, Patrick Mahomes was among a group of players who, in a video, said Black Lives Matter. Now, that was an extremely controversial position because the league didn't want anything to do with the Black Lives Matter movement because many white fans, and I say white because this issue largely breaks down along racial lines, and we know this from polling conducted, but many white fans felt that the Black Lives Matter movement was not something that they believed in or wanted to hear about. And the league stayed away from it, even when the league was funding social justice issues in an effort to get the players to stop protesting after Kaepernick ignited the protest movement. Well, suddenly Patrick Mahomes, who at that point, we got to remember when he said Black Lives Matter in that video, he was the unquestioned number one player in the league. You can debate now that, look, Aaron Rodgers won the last two MVP awards. You can debate, Mahomes is somewhere between 1 and 3. But any discussion of the top 5 quarterbacks or the top 3 quarterbacks in the NFL, if Patrick Mahomes is not in that discussion, it's not a real discussion. But at the time, he had just come off a league MVP award. Then he just came off leading the Chiefs to their first championship in 50 years, and he won the Super Bowl MVP award. He became the only quarterback at that moment to lead a team to 3 consecutive double-digit playoff victories in which they trailed by double digits. So he was the guy. There was no question about that. And he said Black Lives Matter. You know what happened after that? Roger Goodell, in answering every point the players asked for in that video, said Black Lives Matter. And that's when we saw the power of Patrick Mahomes and the ascent of black quarterbacks in this league. And if Colin Kaepernick had been of Patrick Mahomes' ability level, Colin Kaepernick would have still been in the NFL because you couldn't get rid of Patrick Mahomes because he's simply too good. Colin Kaepernick was just good enough for the NFL to turn its back on him.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. We're talking to Jason Reed right here. He is the author of Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Time for my final four quickies. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. 4 quick ones. Just tell me the first thing that pops in your mind, just a few words, sentence or so. What's the next book you want to write?
Something on the NFL.
Okay. So you don't have the next one teed up, ready to go?
No, man. I'm this one's been out. This one will be out 2 weeks tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know how it works. Like I said, never had the gumption to go do what it takes to write a book. So I don't know when you do have it, how often those ideas come around. All right. Who was your favorite player growing up as a kid?
Oh, Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, wow.
Giants.
Okay. All right. Who's your Super Bowl pick? Who beats who this year?
Chiefs over the Green Bay Packers.
Man knows how to play to his audience, I will say that. And finally, when it's all said and done, Patrick Mahomes wins how many Super Bowls?
3.
All right. I'll take it. It's 2 more. I'm not going to get greedy. Jason, I'm really enjoying the book. Thank you so much for spending some time. We encourage everybody to get it wherever you get your books. You can get it. It's called Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Jason Reed is the author. And, Jason, we thank you so much for your time. We really, really do appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. Jason Reed from ESPN. Great read. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think if you are in the interest of quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, this would be a great place to go. Got any gifts to give? Anybody who's a football fan, I think they will really love it. There's a whole chapter on Patrick Mahomes, which I think people will enjoy. It has been a great read so far. Like I said, I think I'm about, I have to look here, 79 pages in to the book, and it's been very, very enjoyable. We will take a break, come back, wrap things up here with the kicker.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Who threw the last perfect game in Major League Baseball? It was 10 years ago today. Felix Hernandez. There were three perfect games in 2012. There has not been one since.
Who are the other two? Matt Cain,
Philip Umber, and I think it was Matt Cain.
Yeah. Your producer Adam nailed that, by the way.
Well, well done, well done. I'm proud of you. What are we playing for? Playing
for, for some jazz.
Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Go to jazzkitchen.com. You can see their great menu, made from scratch menu, all kinds of great items. Everybody in the family will love dinner at Jazz. Go there tonight, either in the Legends, 39th and State Line by the University of Kansas Health System, or out in Independence. It's I-70 and 291. Get you some catfish bites, one of my favorite apps on the menu. Go check it out. The blackened chicken Diane, a wonderful choice as well. If you'd like.
Shrimp etouffee.
You are a fan, no doubt.
That's
of
my,
the shrimp
that's
etouffee.
My to-go. I go to the restaurant, I get the blackened chicken
Diane. You order three dinners
the
and then you order three more to go home?
Order the blackened chicken Diane at the table and I get the shrimp etouffee to go.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
With red beans and rice and jambalaya. You know,
yeah, yeah, like do what you got to do.
Load it
do
up.
What you got to do. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Go see him tonight. You can find him online at jazzkitchen.com. Leave you with this. Pete Carrill has passed away. Do you remember Pete Carrill?
I do.
One of the great looks on the sideline of all time was the hair messed up and when things weren't going his way, and he just had this look of pure agony.
Yes.
What a tremendous basketball coach Pete Carrill was. Hall of Famer. He's the one who brought notoriety to the Princeton offense. 30-year tenure as the head coach of the Princeton Tigers. He died this morning at the age of 92. 13 Ivy League regular season titles. They did not have postseason conference tournaments, so 13 times he guided Princeton into the NCAA tournament. And as a 16, had the one seed. I know UMBC finally broke through and got it done. But until then, the biggest scare ever. And I'll say it would have been a much bigger upset had his Princeton team taken down Georgetown at that time. I think there's more good players, and I think the top is watered down more by guys being able to leave early. The upper echelon is not what it used to be. That was a team. That one had Mourning. Did it also have Mutombo?
I think so.
Yeah. Or did they get Mutombo the next year? I can't remember. Did they have both? Zoe? I know they had Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah.
But they were a number one seed and took John Thompson and Georgetown all the way to the wire. Just an amazing game to watch. And you kept waiting for Georgia. No one had even come close to knocking off a one seed.
No.
There'd only been one 2 seed that had lost at that time. And for Pete Carrill and Princeton and his backdoors and the fakes, I mean, just a great fun to watch as well.
And one of the great first-round games upsets of all time, 1996. The Tigers is the 13 seed.
Taking down UCLA.
The defending champion UCLA in the first round. 43-41 was the final in that game.
That was one of my earliest memories. But before then, I'd really only had the attention span to watch KU games. And so that was kind of the first tournament where I was sitting down watching everything. And it was a hell of a memory to have.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. And he was one of the guys that emphasized the three-point shot, too. They had all their backdoor cuts, and they'd set you up and draw you out with the three-point shot and then cut to the basket. I mean, it was amazing to watch. I mean, Alonzo Mourning, an incredible shot blocker, and they're still getting layups on Georgetown because of that Pete Carrill offense, the Princeton offense. It was absolutely fantastic. All right, that's going to do it for us here today. We're back at it tomorrow. More from Chiefs camp tomorrow. We'll see you, too.